This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and rewatch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
Dana Carvey and David Spade here.
You might know our podcast, Fly on the Wall, featuring guests from across the entertainment industry.
We decided to do a spinoff called Superfly, and it's fun. It's just two of us riffing on current events, pop culture, catching up, impressions.
Joe, Trump's trying to be a dictator.
Yeah, just bump on the tater tots.
Joe, no.
Listen to and follow Superfly on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast.
It's the Hoffman Show on the Team 980. Aggressive on the air horns, Anthony. A double air horn day? Anything specific?
I had to sound the alarm just because the Commanders haven't really looked the best.
Oh, okay. Well, it is time for Not My Beat here on a Tuesday, and the air horns means one thing. Yes, the air horns means Mitch Tischler is with us. Mitchell, have you made any sense of what the hell we experienced, 10 feet apart in the press box at Northwest Stadium on Sunday?
Nope. It's just as baffling Tuesday at 5 p.m. as it was Sunday at 4:30 p.m. The last, 4 minutes of that game were incredible. And if you're a football fan, what clearly a ton of fun to watch 41 points in the fourth quarter. But those first three quarters, and honestly, overall, when you look at this game, entirely unacceptable from this Commanders team to show up that way and for the offense to not be able to put some points on.
Yeah. If we look at it the way this offensive line is playing right now, how big of an issue is that, do you think, to their struggles, and what would be the solution to get it to play better?
I think the offensive line is one of the issues. I think a lot of it is injury related, but I also think it's play call related as well. I mean, they haven't been able to get the run game going. A lot of the quick game stuff that was working really well early in the day, early in the season, wasn't particularly working. They haven't been calling it much. And I think a lot of the things that Cliff Kingsbury was doing to kind of help protect an offensive line that, graded out on PFT and all those other things far above what their actual, skill level / group rankings should be, I think his play calling helped them out a whole lot early in the season. And as the season's progressed, we're seeing a lot more 5-7-step drops, longer developing plays. And quite frankly, it's starting to look a little bit like Eric Bieniemy's offense looked last year, where, you try and run the ball on first and second down from time to time. Bieniemy didn't run the ball that much, and then it comes to third and long or third and medium, and you're going through and having to block longer, having to protect longer, having to deal with blitzes more often, because you're not giving that front seven group a whole lot of stuff to look at. They know they can keep their eye on Jaden and get after the quarterback that way. So I think I think there's a lot of different reasons that this offense hasn't been executing the way that it can. But, I think a lot of it comes down to the lack of running game and the lack of quick game.
So First of all, I will not let any comparisons of this offense to the Eric Bieniemy offense stand on this show. That is, they're absolutely not. Like, yes, there are more five and seven step drops.
That's,
and like,
that's the only point I was making.
I'm just making sure that we are clarifying that, because last year was malpractice. This is something else. I guess the thing that I struggle with on that front, though, Mitch, is it's not like they're calling a ton of different stuff in the run game. Yes, I do think there's opportunities to potentially pass a little bit more on early downs and do some of the quick game stuff, and that stuff is there. It's just not being executed as well as it was earlier this season. And the biggest difference to me is the running game, but it's not like they're not trying different things. Like, they're running Wanda, the weak side zone away from the tight end. They're running the pin pull toss stuff. They're running the funky delay, you know, thing that somehow Austin always slides out of, where it looks like he's about to get tackled 5 yards behind the line of scrimmage. And they're running their GT, you know, guard tackle pull plays that have been their bread and butter all year. And they're not hitting. Like, I at that point, I just don't know how much of that is on the play caller versus the players. And if that stuff's not working, it's not like there's other runs they can go to. Like, those are the runs that exist in the NFL.
Correct. And I agree with you that the run game in and of itself doesn't look much different. But the fact that we're not getting nearly as much quick game, you're not getting receivers with your playmakers, the ball in their hands early in the game, means that you're allowing teams to concentrate on what's happening in between the tackles. And that's, to me, what the problem is. And, you know, it's all, the offense isn't just the run game or just the pass game. Obviously, it's complementary. But the less eye candy that you're giving these defenses, the less that you're getting the ball to the outside in positions where players can make plays, the less defenses have to respect, you know, what's happening out there. And clearly, outside of Terry McLaurin, who it's easy to just double him and try and take him away, none of the other receivers, tight ends or receivers, are really winning one-on-one battles on the outside. And as a whole for the offense, and part of it is the run game was much better early in the season, they were at 2nd and 6, 3rd and 3. They had shorter down and distances. They had down and distances where they could either run or throw the ball. And now you're getting into a situation where these first down runs, these consistent first and second down runs, are leaving you 3rd and longs. I think you can look at the 3rd down conversion stats and directly point to that as a big issue for why this offense isn't moving. So I think there's, you know, there's no simple explanation for it all, is I guess what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I guess the only thing that it's not even disagree. It's just like, maybe my slice here on Thanksgiving week, my slice of blame pie is a little different in one part of my pie versus yours is, like, the part of the reason they're not getting to some of these plays and some of these quick game things and things like that is because they're not getting the 11 play drives they got consistently earlier in the season. And so there's just not the play volume to get to as many things. You can't get to the 3rd play in the sequence if the sequence dies on 3rd and 7 without getting a 1st down. And when you run the ball on 1st down, you're in 2nd and 7. Well, now you try to go quick game and you got a drop, or the ball gets batted. Like, now it's 3rd and 7, and they actually did the things that we wanted. We wanted them to run the ball. We wanted them to go quick game, but you have execution mistakes on both of them, and you're in a bad spot. So I don't think we're disagreeing at all, to be clear to the audience, and I think we understand this talking to each other as we talk ball enough to do this, but, like, to the audience, like, we don't disagree on where the problem is. I think if there's any disagreement, it's like, how are we getting there? Because I will tell you, like, even watching this game back, Cliff, I think, is really, really consistent of doing wild stuff on 2nd downs. And, like, in this game, there's the reverse to Diami, which is a beautiful design. There is some other stuff they do that's really creative and smart and works. But then you commit a penalty that you didn't commit earlier in the year. Or Tyler Biadasz snaps the ball on 1 instead of on 2. And, like, that kills a drive. And so, where earlier in the year they just played this tremendously clean football and were able to get 10 play drives on the regular and get to all this stuff, I just don't think the opportunities are there because they're not executing as well in the base of their offense, this running game, especially that was just magnificent to start the season.
I agree with you, and I think what you said was correct about us, you know, talking about this, but the one thing I would point out is, like, you look at this Cowboys offense, right? It's not a particularly explosive offense. There's not a lot of great players out there. And yet they're still able to force the ball to CeeDee Lamb for him to get 10 catches, you know, he had 13 or 14 targets, whatever the number was. And Terry McLaurin is sitting there with four catches for, what, 15, 16 yards before the 86-yarder at the end of the game. Like, to me, you know, that's harkening back to the same issues that we've seen with this Commanders offense with multiple offensive coordinators, where for whatever reason, they're not getting the ball into their playmakers' hands. And quite frankly, you know, with some of this run game issues that are happening, I'd rather have a quick tunnel screen carry or even a pop pass or a reverse to Diami or whoever it may be instead of some of these runs, because quite frankly, Harry gets the ball in his hands and there's a chance that he's going to take it for 25 yards every time he touches it. He's the best player on your offense, not named Jaden Daniels. He needs the ball in his hands earlier in games more often. You need teams to respect the fact that your playmakers are going to be, you know, handling the football. Even CeeDee Lamb got that carry early on in the game. You know, it was just lined up in the backfield and handed it off to him. There, to me, I'm not down on Cliff and this offense and all this. I think a lot of it is execution. And quite frankly, I think a lot of it is also injury-related and the late bye week related as well. But at the same time, you can look at it and see, you know, four drives starting from the Commanders' 39-yard line or better in the first half, and seeing them come away with 3 points is really disappointing. And part of it is, you know, them settling for the field goal on the 4th-and-2 early on in that game. Part of it is some of Jaden Daniels' decision-making as well. You know, there's a lot of different factors to all of this. It's something that you hope they can clean up. And in the moment, I think it's okay to be critical of what we're seeing on the football field. But I think also you can't lose sight of where this team is and where this offense is compared to what we expected. You know, through 5 weeks of the season, we're saying Jaden may be an MVP. It's not like he's all of a sudden locked in as a terrible football player and everyone's caught up to everybody and all the different narratives that, you know, folks are kind of starting to throw out there. So there's some nuance to everything that's happening.
100%. And Mitch Hessler, co-host of the Beltway Football Podcast with us here on the Hoffman Show. The Terry point is the one that I'm 100% in agreement on. And, you know, you and I have been talking about this for years, and again, under multiple OCs, where it's just like, hey, he's the best you got. Not that he's Justin Jefferson, you need to get him 18 targets a game, but like 8 would be nice, 10 would be nice, and some of it is the play volume, right? The percentages look probably more similar than people would imagine because they're just not running as many plays. They ran, I think, 67 in this game by the end of it, but a ton of those come in that final five of the fourth quarter where they finally string together that long drive. But it still should be higher, and when they're making these choices, and whether it's Jaden making the choice or Cliff making the choice, I don't know, to throw some of this quick stuff to Noah Brown, for instance, as opposed to Terry, that some of these design touches are going to Diami instead of Terry. Like, these are things that to me seem fairly easily fixable and fairly logical on just, hey, let's not lose the forest through the trees here. And that's the thing that I just wonder what the reasoning is, and it feels like it's easily fixable. And that to me is like the biggest point of criticism. And to your point, especially if the run game is just not going to be effective because the O-line is banged up and now B-Rob and Eckler are banged up and all these things, like, okay, well, let's get the smokes and the slants and the hitches to Terry, because, like, CeeDee Lamb actually didn't have a great game. He had 10 catches for 67 yards. They were 9 hitches that he ran in that game, which is crazy. That's just not a way to go nowhere fast. But you get a couple of those, and then you can take the top off the defense. Then things open up elsewhere, and the threat of him is there in a way that it just doesn't feel like this Commanders offense has a threat of really anything right now outside of, like, Terry getting the random one that he busts loose because he's Terry and he makes magic happen.
Right, and through the first three quarters, I thought the defense did a pretty good job, you know, of keeping this Cowboys offense in check. Obviously, they're helped by a block and a missed field goal and, you know, all of that. But CeeDee Lamb had, you said, 67 yards, so he averaged 6.7 yards a catch.
Right.
I would kill for a 7-yard first down play, just a quick hitch to Terry there. You know, get yourself to a 2nd-and-3 early on in the game where you can be, you know, confusing for a defense and not allow them to pin their ears back and do all those different things. Listen, I thought Jaden looked healthy for the first time on Sunday. I also think for the first time I saw some pretty poor decisions made by him. I think about the interception that he threw to B-Rob. I mean, granted, he's under pressure, but B-Rob had two Cowboys right there. Best case scenario, B-Rob catches it and gets dropped for a loss of 4 yards. Throw that ball on the ground, dirt it, live to fight another day with whatever was 50 seconds left in the first half. They're just over midfield. They have a 3rd and 9. You know, they don't convert it, but what's worse about not converting it is Jaden runs out of bounds, stops the clock, allows the Cowboys to save a timeout. We saw what happened. They drive down the field with 50 seconds and kick a field goal to go into halftime tied, and all of a sudden they feel like they have a little bit of light. And we've seen teams come into FedEx Field, Northwest Stadium, over the years and put their foot on the Commanders, Washington Football, Redskins team throat and remind them, hey, you're not as good as we are, and we're gonna show you that. And this team had an opportunity to do that to Dallas early. Dallas really tried to give this thing away. I mean, the field position situation to come away with only 3 points in that first half is really awful. And it's a killer instinct that isn't, you know, that maybe needs to be learned a little bit from a team that doesn't have a ton of success, you know, over the years, that certain players haven't seen a ton of success from. But it's something that's got to get better as we move forward.
Yeah, and let me ask you one final question on the way out here, Mitch. One of my, like, I don't have a lot of criticisms of DQ this year. I think he's done, by and large, a tremendous job, and I like the way he goes about his business in a bunch of ways. But there's kind of one thing that is, and irks is probably too strong, too emotionally evocative, but one thing that just doesn't add up for me is his decision-making on fourth downs, where you want to be this bold team. You talk about being bold. You talk about being aggressive. You talk about being in people's faces. And then on fourth down, you pretty consistently punt or kick field goals in situations where more aggressive coaches, and so I'm not even talking about just Dan Campbell, because Dan Campbell, they ought to eat kneecaps, and he's going for fourth down all the time. But, I mean, John Harbaugh last night on his own 16-yard line, you got all kinds of coaches around the league making these aggressive fourth down decisions, especially when you've got a super weapon in Jaden in those situations. It just doesn't add up for me. Is that something that makes sense? Like, does Dan's decision making make sense to you, or are you kind of where I am on that in terms of the approach here?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not in the business of making excuses for Dan Quinn, because I do like the aggressiveness that we've seen out of him. I wonder if B-Rob had just gotten hurt, was out of the game, wasn't available for, who is obviously your short down back. Eckler and McNichols are really nice pieces, but they're not power running through the middle of between the tackles. So I wonder if maybe he was concerned that it just looked clearly like teams would be able to load up on Jaden Daniels on that fourth down, and that's why he ultimately decided to kick that field goal. But, you know, we were joking, not you and I, JP and I on the Always Football podcast, were joking early in the season about no fade in Jaden. You know, when you have the best, most athletic player on the football field at any given time, you want the ball in his hands. Now, obviously, Michael Parsons is on the other side, so maybe there's a question particularly to this game. But I would like to see a little more consistency in those, end of half and fourth down conversion situations. Ultimately, you know, it wasn't that one play that was the difference in the game. To me, when you went into halftime tied 3-3, you allowed a hurt Cowboys team to have some confidence, and they came out and were able to, you know, to steal a game from you.
Yeah, to me, that the aggressiveness thing also goes into the decision to not go for two at the end of the game. That's something I probably would have done as well. But yeah, it would have been nice if BSJ and Jeremy Chinn could not have given up a 41-yard bomb down the sideline in a situation where, you know, that's the only thing that hurts you. That would have been cool. Mitch Tischler, Beltway Football Podcast. What's your guys' schedule this week with the holiday, Mitch?
Yeah, we're going to have a podcast out tomorrow morning or late tonight, and we'll have one on Friday as well. And then Sunday we will have one post-game after the Titans live on the Monumental Sportsnet app. Hopefully we're talking about a Commanders win going into the bye week at 8-5, and they can use that bye week as a springboard for those final four games and hopefully a playoff game in mid-January.
And if not, we're all going to suddenly be asking our bosses for some early December vacation, because those 2 weeks are going to be miserable. Mitch Tischler, everybody, with us every Tuesday on the Hoffman Show. Thank you, Mitchell.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
and have a great Thanksgiving. That's Mitch Tischler with us here on the Hoffman Show. We are live at Capital One Arena, and that means that coming up in about 25 minutes or so, Dave Johnson will be live on set with us ahead of Wizards and Bulls tonight. But coming up next here on the Team 980, 5:30 on a Tuesday, this is going to be on the regular schedule, our Take Command Tape Tuesday. Jaden Daniels has a propensity to throw the ball to the right. The Commanders line Terry McLaurin up on the left quite a bit. Is that a problem? Logan Paulson and I discuss next.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
With the second pick in the 2024 NFL Draft, the Washington Commanders select Jaden Daniels.
Jaden Daniels holds the keys to the Commanders' future.
Daniels is going to walk it in for the touchdown.
Take Command holds the keys to knowing how he played.
In the big moment when you needed to make plays, he just consistently made plays.
It's time for a Take Command Tape Tuesday.
Jaden Daniels just lays it out there perfectly. What a throw.
On the Hoffman Show.
There has been a lot of consternation, Logan, about left side Terry. Terry McLaurin consistently lining up on the left side of the formation. And I have been, and you have been, fairly resistant to the idea that that is some enormous problem, in part because the offense through the first like 7-8 weeks was the second most efficient offense in the entire league. And it's only second to a historically great Baltimore offense. Like most years, the way that Washington was operating offensively would make them the best offense in the league the first like 7-8 weeks. So how mad can you be? Secondly, Terry's having the best season of his career. So how mad can you be about it if the guy is consistently, producing? And so that all of a sudden starts to fall away a little bit. Obviously, his numbers in this game wind up being okay because he's an 86-yard miracle play at the end of it that kind of saves the stat sheet, if you will, and should have really, or could have saved the game if different decisions or kicks were made. But at the end of it, you do kind of have to go like, okay, well, is there a point here? Is there an even better version that could be unlocked? And as we were talking about, and I was watching the tape and you and I were texting a little bit, and I was just kind of thinking about, well, so many of these key third down situations, Jaden is throwing to Noah Brown on the right. And at what point do you wonder, is there some kind of right side bias with Jaden, in which case left side Terry is an issue, right? You want to get your best player the ball. If your quarterback likes throwing one way, your best receiver lines up on the other side, that would seem like a problem. Well, luckily, Pro Football Focus tracks every throw, and so it made it very easy to go look up. And for those watching on YouTube, I will embed this chart here so that everyone can see it. But for those listening on the podcast, I will simply read. On the distribution of passes, Jaden this year, past the line of scrimmage. Actually, I can do totals here on the left side. 16, 10, that's 26, plus 14 is 40. He has thrown 50 balls to the left. He has thrown 46 balls to the right side within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage. 22 in the 10 to 20 range, 9, 20 plus, 23 behind the line of scrimmage. So we are talking about a massive, massive bias here to the right side of the field. And so, Logan, that is the data. What do you make of said data?
Yeah, I mean, obviously there does seem to be a slight preference to the right. I mean, I have to watch. So we kind of got to this like later last night, so I haven't really looked into it a ton yet in terms of like watching the film. Now, what I would say is that, you know, offensive coordinators tend to be right-handed biased. Quarterbacks who are right-handed tend to be slightly right-handed biased in terms of where they're throwing the football. Now, all these throws, they could be like little sticks and quick outs, and they could be to different receivers. They could be to Zach. It doesn't matter, you know what I'm saying? But if he is more comfortable, this is something you'd have to talk with him about as the offensive coordinator, throwing the deep ball to the right, I would say it would behoove you to get Terry to the right a little bit more, right? However, like I do look at this chart, and he has thrown 16 deep balls to his left, right, which is where Terry lines up, which makes me think they're probably taking shots to Terry, and they do it more to the left because Terry's on that side, right? So I do think there are things in this graph that kind of say they are aware that Terry's on the left. They're okay with that. The types of throws they're taking to Terry are a little bit different than the types of throws they're taking to Noah or to Zach or whoever. And the other thing that I would just, again, like this is like where you're thinking through stuff, is are they more single receiver to the offensive left and more bunch, trips, double, whatever you are, to the offensive right? And if that's the case, then some of your quick game stuff, which is in this intermediate pass game, is going to be more likely to be thrown to the offensive right because that's where the concept initiates in terms of quick game. So those are some thoughts that I have just looking at this. And again, we'll have to delve into this a little bit more. But if he does prefer, and this is just this is easy because you just have a conversation with him. Hey, man, do you like throwing it to the right more? Yes? Okay. Well, let's get Terry on the right some more for you, some of those opportunities. I think it would just be a simple way to handle that at its most rudimentary form. Now, in terms of interpreting these numbers, we got to watch a little bit more film, but I think that's what I would say. If I'm the coordinator and this was presented to me, I'd be like, hey, bro, do you like throwing to your right? Okay, cool. Let's get Terry over there a little bit more.
So my follow-up question would be, if some of those quick game concepts are over to the right, like, can we get Terry involved in those more? Because he's not bad at running that stuff. The slants, the comebacks, like he's pretty sure-handed on a lot of that stuff. And we know he's great after the catch. So especially on some of the slants and things like that to try to get him into space, I want him involved in that stuff. I want him involved, period. He's clearly the best player. So why would you do that stuff to the right versus the left as opposed to field versus boundary, however you design it? Like, that's an honest question. I don't know the answer, so I'm asking you. And two, how hard would it be to then get Terry in some of those spots?
Yeah, and again, this is something we have to watch and figure out because, like, are these just screen passes? Are these just whatever? You know what I mean? Like, what are these throws and why are they going more to the right? Is it RPOs? Is it, like, what is the composition of this? And do they, and maybe it's O-line related. Like, if they, maybe they like pulling Sam more, right? And so you're reading the backside hook player to the right. And because Sam's a better puller, like the RPO action is you're reading the backside will, who's going to be to the right. You know what I'm saying? Like, it could be a million different things, and that's where we'd have to watch and kind of figure it out. If that's the case, then yeah, it wouldn't be bad to put Terry over there. Maybe you want Terry in that one-on-one look because a big part of Cliff's offense, right, is being able to say, oh, I have my one-on-one matchup, let me deal it to Terry. And so there are different things that could easily be the explanation for it. This is a longer term project for us to kind of figure out why this would be. So again, like, we'll figure it out. It could be a million different things. Cliff just likes Terry on the left because he likes the one-on-one matchup. Or, you know, we like to pull the right guard more, so our RPO quick game is to the right. Like, I have no idea. We'll have to dig into it a little bit more. But it is interesting. Now, determining whether it's significant or not is a completely different kind of ball of wax.
Yeah, I guess my hypothesis, right, when scientists conduct experiments, and clearly, Logan, if this podcast is nothing else, we are football scientists. My hypothesis would be that there are opportunities where Terry or the receiver on the right could get it, and we are going to find some... No, not like massive, but also not insignificant amount of times where he like could throw Terry as an option, where it's man coverage and he chooses the guy on the right versus Terry. And there's a couple in this game where I just wrote down throw Terry, and some of them are deep balls, some of them are comebacks, some of them are quick outs, whatever. But here I actually just decided, well, if PFF has this chart for receivers or for quarterbacks, they probably have it for receivers too, and so. Here's the Terry McLaurin receiving depth chart, Logan. It's pretty wild because D deep, like out deep, deep attempts outside left. He hasn't taken a true deep shot. It says to the right, which is obviously not correct because it's got the Cincinnati play was to the right. So I don't know where they counted that. Maybe the ball didn't travel 20 in the air, but it was a 30-plus yard play. So I don't know exactly why that's not there.
This is, again, like where some of this information gets a little bit weird, but your point, yeah, the graph is illuminating.
Yeah, so but overall, I'd take outside left out of it versus outside right. Terry has basically the same number of looks in the intermediate, kind of that deep comeback area, left and right this year. And we've told you how much more he's lined up on the left. He has lined up on the left, assuming this didn't change on Sunday, more to any single side than any receiver in football. Like, so it is an extreme in terms of that. Now, the reason I think we have said pretty consistently that we don't think it's as big of a problem is because, again, there's a cleanliness to the looks for Jaden. There is an ability to go fast, right? That some of the air raid principles that Cliff has of just like, stay over there. Don't be moving all around, because then once we get a conversion, we can go fast. We're not trying to, you know, have everybody running all over the field. It's also extra running, so those guys get more tired. Just like, run your route, come back. Run your route, come back. Run your route, come back. And it kind of keeps you in a bit more of a box. So there are advantages to it. And I guess my hypothesis of the case is that you can still keep all that stuff. You don't need to add all this extra motion. And because, you know, a lot of what coaches do with motion, Cliff does with formations. It's not like Terry's getting jammed up all the time. Like, he's getting good releases. He's getting good matchups. He just doesn't seem to be in the place where Jaden is most comfortable throwing the football. And so if it's possible to just simply switch Noah and Terry, and I understand that switching like an X and a Z is not just like snap of the fingers, but if there is a way to invert large parts of this offense and get Terry on the right side, it would seem like it would be worth it based off of the distribution of where Jaden is throwing the football. That is my working hypothesis going into the experiment, Logan. Although I fully understand why you have to conduct the experiment.
Yeah, and again, like, we'll see what this looks like. Because again, the other thing is, you brought this up too, is like, this is Terry's most efficient year, right? So obviously they've worked out some type of relationship and they understand like how to get Terry the football when he needs to get the football. And, you know, even the explosive play to Terry who they just play? The Dallas Cowboys?
Cowboys,
you know,
game, yeah.
Like, he's on the right. He's running a rail to the right. Like there's and again, that's like kind of a very common end of game play that people run, but he gets the ball over there. So I think they understand the importance of Terry. I think fans look at that graph and say, oh, they don't understand. But I think they understand the importance of getting the ball to Terry, and I've seen him catch slants and hitches to the right too. You know, we got to go through the whole thing and kind of figure it out, and we'll do that. We'll kind of delve into it. So I'm still not that alarmed by it. I think it feels, and this is the other thing, it feels worse after a game like this when the offensive efficiency is generally down. You know, like, I look at all the number of three and outs, but just because you can't run the plays you want to run. And they did take shots to Terry. They took opportunities deep to him. And so it's not like they're not exploiting that. They just didn't hit on them with the same level of frequency that they normally do. Like, we just talked about the Skinner to Terry. If Jane can sit in the pocket, that's probably a completion. They got the deep ball that they missed. They just barely missed. Like, think about, if they hit that, are we having the same conversation? And so, you know, he hit some of those versus Pittsburgh. And I think it's 2 weeks in a row where teams, Philly specifically, was a little bit more aware of him. They're kind of rolling coverage that way a little bit more. Dallas, I'd have to go back and watch it again just to kind of confirm that now that we're talking through this. But I'm not that concerned about it now. If this becomes like a multi-game issue, maybe. And again, we're going to watch the film and figure it out. But again, I'm not that worried about it right now. And again, there's more information to kind of be gleaned and figure out, you know, what the root cause of all this is.
Yeah, I guess my only thing is, I would hope that they don't have the approach of like, oh, this is good enough, it's fine if there's better available, right? Like, don't let good, like, just don't, like, you don't want to let perfect be the enemy of good. You don't want good to be the enemy of better. And so if there's an opportunity to be better, I would hope that they would take that. And that is generally their approach, right? Like, that's what it means to compete as a coach. Yeah. It's to consistently trying to hunt for better. So that is something I think that is worth watching the rest of the season and see if maybe during some of the self-scouting or whatever. I mean, these guys pay attention too. So hi, everybody in Ashburn, if you're paying attention to this, I'm curious what you would you would think of it. But yeah, I'm excited to go back and watch this a little bit more and see if we can find any more meat on this bone. And perhaps it's something we'll talk about on Thursday, or perhaps it's a good bye week project because, yeah, you know, the bye week is coming and they still expect us to do a podcast.
Probably better bye week project. Yeah.
So. Yeah. So, what? You got Thanksgiving dinner or something on Thursday?
we could do it on Thanksgiving. It's just going to take a little bit of time.
Want more from Craig and Logan? Subscribe now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. More Hoffman Show next on the Team 980 and the free Odyssey app.
Right corner, Kispert open for three. It's there.
Time to get the radio party started.
Feeds now the right block of Alsar. Slam!
It's time for Dave Johnson on a Wizards game day.
Blocked by Colomoli. Left wing George. 3 on the clock for three. It's there. Feel like busting loose. Busting loose. Crossover step back. Three. Oh. Jordan Poole.
You are cool.
Feel like busting loose. Busting loose now.
On the Hoffman Show.
We're live at Capital One Arena, which means Dave Johnson's with us on set. How are we doing, sir?
Yeah, doing well, and love the Capital City Go-Go music, the Chuck Brown. And you were just talking to the break about this time it gets hungry here at Capital One Arena.
Yeah, this is hungry hour.
The preparation is going on for about to open the doors in 10 minutes here at Capital One Arena. So the food is being cooked. And you'll notice I was hanging out by your wonderful position right outside Section 106 here.
Yeah.
And I saw... We have a new sponsor, Big Mott's.
Big Mott's.
Mozzarella Sticks.
Yeah, on Wizards Radio.
On Wizards Radio.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, let me get a picture next to that billboard. I waited 20 minutes and never saw the commercial again. But it's available at Giant, and they're on Wizards Radio. And how's that for a free shameless plug?
There you go. They need more advertising because they're only showing up once every 30 minutes on the thing. We got to talk to the people in charge of the thing.
Yeah, the thing. The thing
over there. The people. They're in charge.
And
we're not in charge of anything.
The thing is, because people know this now, with billboards and screens, it rotates. Once upon a time when I grew up, and we walked 10 miles to the school in snow.
Yes, you just uphill both ways.
Uphill both ways. You just had static billboards. But, you know, technology is changing every moment. You know, I keep hearing this rumor. You might even be on YouTube today. So,
Dave,
technology is
amazing.
I didn't
tell you, but that's the camera right there.
There we go.
We're live on the internet right now, for better or for worse. Unfortunately for the basketball team that's going to play out there through that hallway, where you're going to describe what happens here on the radio, things have been going mostly for the worse for the better part of a month here in terms of the results, right?
Yeah, and you know what? And I saw somebody, a great listener I hadn't heard from, tweet out about, you know, well, they just keep losing. Well, no, we're on an 11-game losing streak right now. The goal was not to turn it into a 20-game losing streak. This team is trying to win. And it actually, we were looking at some numbers, it is becoming a better defensive team, but not rebounding. And part of defense is rebounding. So, this team will find success, and maybe tonight against the Chicago Bulls. You're actually seeing with Bilal Coulibaly, Alex Sarr on the floor, this defensive improvement. But part of it is, okay, you contested the first shot. You've got to get that rebound. And that's been hurting this team. It is going to be a discovery year. It is going to be a growth year. But you have to celebrate an Alex Sarr getting 17 points and 14 rebounds and two blocks and God knows whatever else.
Especially the 14 rebounds,
right,
considering where they've been.
Look, they had a chance to win that game in Indianapolis. We're 15 games into the season. You know, you can point to, or I can point to, a couple games against Detroit and New York back-to-back, and that was an end of a stretch. We talked about this, of 7 games, 11 days, or whatever it was. And
that feels like the one time they've kind of let go of the rope a little
bit,
they hung back on.
Right.
I guess the thing is that I'd be curious about is because you, like in your prep, you're studying this on a more granular level. You're around the team every day in a way that a lot of us are not, especially me right now, considering all the football stuff that I got to do. But, like, the definition of insanity is repeating the same process and expecting a different result.
Right.
And when I check the box scores and things, it's like, oh, Alex Sarr tried 4 threes again. And the thing is, like, the process is actually in a lot of ways correct. Have you been able to see whether it's quarter by quarter? And I actually just re-listened because I'm prepping for something that we're going to do. I was listening back to some things that Michael and Will talked about at the end of last year. And Michael referenced, you know, at the end of the year, we want a significantly higher percentage of our quarters, our halves, things like that. As you've done, you know, kind of been prepping, are there signs somewhere in the data that, like, yes, they're still losing, but it is closer, and eventually this losing streak is going to come to an end, and maybe even they can string together a couple of wins.
Yeah, there are signs, because Indiana, take the other, you know, here's another thing about basketball. You have to make open shots.
Yes.
And so it's...
So I've heard.
And I'm not being funny, but it's a fine margin. And I think about the other night, when it was tight, all of a sudden Indiana, they make a couple open threes, the Wizards don't. That's the difference in the game. And that's a game where the Wizards had the lead. It was competitive into the third quarter, and then the shots were not falling. And so, you know, the fourth quarter, for example, against Indiana, this is not sexy stuff, but they held Indiana 23 points. That's great defensively. Problem is you scored 16. That's
right.
Not great offensively. So this team is going to continue to improve, is what you want to see, and play the right way. And we had a conversation yesterday with Will Dawkins. I talk about some defensive improvement I'm seeing individually. But in general, he's saying, look, no, he's not happy. And part of that is the rebounding has to get better. And rebounding is not just incumbent on Alex Saar, who did have 14 rebounds the other night. But, you know, Malcolm Brogdon had that 10-rebound game, I think, Friday.
Kyle's got to be big in that area.
You know, and when you look at who they're playing and how many minutes they're playing and the number of minutes of rookies and young players are playing, it is about getting them better. This, you could make an argument that this team would have already won more games, you know, let's say.
If they're playing Valanciunas 35 minutes a night,
correct,
they'd be a more competitive basketball team.
And that
would not be good for them in the long term.
Long term. And that's the example. That's why, you know, because other teams are seeing, you know, and he's going to attract a lot of interest. I don't know if he'll be here long term or through this season or what. I know he likes it here, and he understands what the situation is, but there's a lot of teams out there that say, we could use Jonas Valanciunas. So this is part of the process that we said at the beginning of the season, that, you know, the roster by the end of the season may have a dramatic difference. We don't know.
Yep.
And this is what we, again, it's not that they're not accountable or wanting to win, but you can't lose your mind over losing, because that's going to be part of this process.
No, it definitely is. Off the wall to finish here, Dave Johnson, of course, the legendary play-by-play voice of the Wizards with us here on the Team 980. What's your favorite Thanksgiving dish?
Favorite Thanksgiving dish? I assume you're saying outside of turkey.
I mean, if you're a turkey guy, that could be your favorite dish.
That is my favorite. Something about the way, and that sounds like, you know, I'm good at stating the obvious, I guess. The other thing I would say, cream corn.
Okay.
Which I would just throw that out there as a wild card.
Okay.
But yeah.
Are you white meat or dark meat on the turkey?
No, and that's the only dark meat. I do like that. So it seems like that's like when you order a turkey sandwich at some of the exotic restaurants I go to that are $6 for a foot long. you get what you don't get.
Are they also a sponsor?
I'm not sure. So that's why I left them out there. But it's typically just the white turkey meat, and I do like the dark. So that's reason to look forward to
that. And that's why Dave Johnson likes turkey on Thanksgiving, because he finally gets the dark meat that he is looking for. Dave and Glenn, with you tonight?
Yes, he is.
Okay,
Glenn,
we're going to bandage you for TV or something?
No.
Being a big fancy superstar?
He does that. You know, it's his hair. Ever since he got hair implants. No, I was kidding. I'm kidding. Now I'm going to get in trouble. I'm kidding about that.
No one listens to the show.
Chase Hughes is going to be with us tonight
for
a while. We're going to have a lot of fun. And by the way, if you're within earshot, our post-game party, the Michelob Ultra post-game party, is at District D. So we're going to be live. So I know you're probably split. Now, you got to get ready for a podcast tomorrow with Logan Paulson.
Yeah, I got to go home and watch Tennessee Titans tape. Nothing could be more exciting. But I'll try to stick around for a little bit. And that means I get to listen to you on
the
way home.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you as well. It's Dave Johnson, everybody. When we get back, we're actually this will be our final 45 minutes of the week, because we got Maryland hoops tomorrow.
Oh, wow.
Knocking us off the air, Dave. So we have to do our NFL picks. So we're going to do that in combination with our competition Wednesday. So we're going to pick every game, three of them each for Anthony and I against the spread. That is next as we wrap up here live from Capital One Arena on the Hoffman Show.